Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And it's been a while. We've been busy men. Many things have happened between the last time we recorded and now.
Many things. The time has come, the walrus said, to speak of many things.
So we have had a solar eclipse.
Yes, which was lovely.
And we had a couple of weeks where the weather conditions in Seattle were reported as smoke.
Yes.
So, many things. And, yeah. So, obviously, we're not going to cover everything that happened in geek culture in the gaps because, boy. Also, I mean, there were some conventions. Fortunately, as far as I can tell, I came across no reports of conventions behaving badly.
Well, there you go. I mean, well, granted, this week, this upcoming weekend is PAX. Well, not only PAX, but it's also Dragon Con. And Dragon Con is just, you know, grown-ups behaving badly. There's a difference. It's not the con.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, Dragon Con, I haven't heard too many stories in recent years of... Because Dragon Con has a pretty good harassment policy.
Yes.
And PAX, well, PAX is PAX. We'll see what happens.
They have enforcers for a reason.
So, yeah, let's see. What has happened? Well, all right. Let's start with some of our classic questions. Have you seen any movies recently?
Well, I finally got to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which was lovely and wonderful, and now I understand why you wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, it's important.
I came kicking and screaming. Well, that's television. We can go from there. That's the only movie of note that I've seen.
So, I haven't been going to the theaters much recently. In fact, a lot of news reports how this is an amazingly lackluster season for movies in the theater. And the only thing I've seen recently in the theater wasn't even anything new. It was Oh So 80s.
Yes.
I went and saw the Riff Tracks live presentation of The Five Doctors.
Awesome.
Which really brings home how, other than the fact that it's a Doctor Who episode with multiple Doctors, isn't very good.
Well, yes, and, you know, their special effects budget is, you know, whatever they managed to shake out of the couches in the green room at the BBC, but, you know.
This version was slightly different than what I had seen in the past. I think this is the special edition with the enhanced effects.
Ooh!
So, which is to say, oh, somebody found an old video toaster somewhere.
Even better.
But with the Riff Tracks, it was great, and they started off with a very dire... I would say late 70s British safety video. And when I say dire British safety video, people die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's one of the things that I love. Those of us across the pond, the closest I ever came was like those, did you ever have in Driver's Ed, the Ohio State films where they're like filming bodies being carried out of broken cars and stuff like that? That's the closest we get on this side of the continent. England has no problem whatsoever with really messing with your mind with stuff like that.
But, of course, I've seen several movies, well, either just sitting down to going, hey, I'm going to watch a movie, thanks to Netflix and Amazon, or, you know, my normal Friday night adventures at Jennifer Lovely's house.
Well, we are living... Go ahead.
Go ahead, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, we're living in the future.
So, interesting movie I saw, and when I say interesting, I don't mean good.
Oh God, we're all going to die?
No, not that bad. Okay. It was called Seven Witches.
Not Seven Dwarves.
No. Seven Witches, and it was a very atmospheric film.
Atmospheric.
Yeah, the director did a great sense on atmosphere and a great sense on palpable dread. However, have you, I don't think you, well, because you don't like these kind of necessarily in movies, I don't think you've ever seen a movie called You're Next.
You're right.
So in the movie You're Next, which is a fantastic horror film that got badly marketed, there is a dinner scene where, because the theme of that movie is three adults come together for their mother's, or their dad's retirement party, okay. I think. And there's a very tense... snipey family dinner that the tension is broken when the first murder happens.
And there's That's a great way to break it in.
And there's a moment when you're God, oh, thank God somebody got killed because I couldn't take that dinner scene anymore.
Okay.
Seven Witches, that's the movie.
Oh my.
That movie is the dinner scene from You're Next all through the movie. But it has one thing of note.
Okay.
It is a local film, and by local I mean for those of us that live in the Pacific Northwest. It's a locally produced and made film. It was filmed at Fort Flagler.
Oh my.
Which, for those of you listening, is a former army base out towards the peninsula in Washington that got converted into a state park and ecologic learning center. And it has cabins that you can rent. And it is notable because it is where Daniel and I first met.
Aw, you remember.
Yeah. So I'm sitting like, wait, I know this place. So does Daniel, but he's not here with me. So it was just jarring for, wow, I recognize this place. I know it well. We spent several years where we would go out every Easter with a group to there. And it's just so, you know, it's that thing where you see something that's familiar, which I found fascinating, but obviously took me out of the film a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually, as atmospheric as you say it is, I am interested to check it out simply from that perspective, because, I mean, you can only watch Officer and a Gentleman so many times.
Right. Now, the other movie I saw recently that is worth watching, but talk about mismarketed, is a movie called Colossal.
Colossal failure? Colossal... Well,
Colossal is the... So, the premise of the movie is a woman whose life is spiraling out of control because of her alcoholism.
Right.
Goes back to her hometown because her parents have a rental property they're not currently renting, and so she can just crash there.
This is the Anne Hathaway, isn't it?
Anne Hathaway. Yeah. And what she discovers is there's something going on in the town where periodically this monster, this giant kaiju monster, will appear in Seoul, South Korea, and she realizes that it's making whatever moments she was making at that time. It's basically an avatar of her. Which, and they market it as kind of a goofy comedy.
Yeah.
It's not.
Interesting.
It is, ultimately, in my opinion, a horror movie. The thing is, the horror does not come directly from the monster. And it's one of those, wow, I can't... Let's put it this way. It is a movie that explores the mechanics of abuse.
Ugh.
So if you find abuse, especially abusive relationships, triggering, this is what the movie's really about.
See also why I haven't watched Jessica Jones yet.
Right. Same thing.
Okay.
So although it does boast an amazing performance from Jason Sudeikis, who's a former SNL performer, who mostly does comedy. And when you see him in this, well, of course it's a comedy. It's Anne Hathaway and Sudeikis.
Yeah.
And then it takes a turn. But from an acting standpoint, he does an amazing job.
Oh.
So it's a good movie. It's amazing. But it really helps to understand the subject matter and the fact that it is an unflinching look.
And, you know, I have to say... Just a tangent here for a second. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, back when, you know, rocks were soft and dirt was new, I had a friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
and his father, his job was to watch a movie and cut it down, cut together a trailer out of the movie.
Okay.
And script it. And thinking of, I always thought that would be like an awesome, awesome job. But then you see things like this,
mm-hmm.
where it is obviously and definitely not a comedy, but it's cut to look like one.
Mm-hmm.
See also when they took Shining and cut it to look like it's a comedy, a romantic comedy, when you know full well it's not.
Or I think the other one is when they took Mary Poppins and cut it as a horror movie.
Yes.
It's, well, yeah, you can, the things you can do in the editing room, the problem is I think a lot of editors, if we're going down this rabbit hole, have gotten lazy where major plot points get spoiled because, oh, it's a big moment, we want to show it. Yeah, you're giving away a late-in-the-movie plot development that maybe you shouldn't.
Oh, yeah.
Which is often sad. I think the brilliant movies are the ones where it's like, you know, the trailer makes you want to go see the movie, but they were very careful to not give away the big issues. And that's becoming a lost art, I think. And yeah, but also, again, it's, you know, like I was saying earlier, the ad campaign for Your Next. hey, my computer phone, no viruses.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Anyway, the ad campaign for Your Next completely let the movie down, in part because they were trying to preserve the plot twist.
Of course.
Or another one I think of is there were terrible ad campaigns for the movie Dredd and John Carter. Now, John Carter was only a so-so movie, but it was completely, could have done better, but it was completely mismarketed. Dredd was a great movie that was also completely mismarketed.
Are you talking about the newer Dredd with
Urban?
Carl Urban?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And although apparently he is in talks to reprise the character in a Netflix series.
That wouldn't be bad. I have to say, though, that was actually one of the bloodiest movies I've seen in a while.
Oh, yeah, but it was very in tone with the comic it's based on.
And it's still bloody, bloody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Lena Headey doing a great performance, which I'm sure we'll talk about her later.
Indeed.
When we get into TV. So, yeah, I did not end up seeing Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. I didn't get around to it, and from what I heard, I missed the pretty, but that was all. And that's kind of sad. I had higher hopes for that movie.
True. I mean, after knowing that it was the same guy that brought us Fifth Element was, I mean, that's a high bar because, I mean, that movie is, what, 20 years old? Give or take?
Give or take. I would have to look.
And I mean, it is still one of the most visually enjoyable movies.
I think this might be a case of sometimes it's a bad thing when a creator gets to make their childhood dream. Because John Carter was that director's childhood dream.
Uh-huh.
And ended up not working as well as it could have. And Valerian was Luc Besson's favorite comic book growing up. And from what I understand, could have been great. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I can't even say for sure it did go off the rails, but people I trust warned me off.
See, I mean, he's French. If I still want to see the big-budget live-action Asterix, if we're going to go down that road. But
yeah. And I think there is one.
Really?
I think there's a live with I can't think of his name, Gerard Depardieu as the big guy.
Oh, my God. Oh, and according to the internet in my pants, yes, Fifth Element is 20 years old this year.
Wow.
So
that should be a viewing then.
By the way, we're old.
We are. That's come home periodically. So I did watch one movie.
That was a heavy sigh.
It was a heavy sigh. It was a lazy day. I had burned through my binge watch of The Tick, which we'll talk about in a bit. My wife was in Oregon because of eclipse-related events. And I was like, what should I watch now? Well, and here was my thought process. I run a geek culture podcast.
Yes.
At some point, I probably should, just to be able to talk about it, watch Suicide Squad.
Oh, you took one for the team, did you?
I really did. And fortunately, I was doing other things at the same time. It's not a good movie. I knew going in, this is not going to be a good movie.
No.
But interestingly, it wasn't a hate watch. It was, I want to see the elements. I want to be able to actually critique this film.
I want to hug them and give them a cookie because it was just like they had such great expectations and just going,
well,
nope.
Part of the reason I was thinking about it is the woman who plays the female lead in Valerian is in Suicide Squad.
Who is she in Suicide?
She is the Enchantress in Suicide Squad.
Ah, yes. The one that everyone forgets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, what a thankless role that was.
Yep.
It was one of those things. I hear she's actually fairly decent, but this movie was not a chance for her to show that. My biggest issues was just tonally all over the place.
Yep.
Which I think is the editing comes out. It's at times hard to follow some of the action because there's not a logical progression.
Nope.
It's really hard. You know, I will give Will Smith credit. He tried really hard to play Deadshot as, you know, the villainous badass, but he's Will Smith.
I was gonna say,
you know, when the character's better angels show up later in the movie, you're like, well, of course it's Will Smith.
I was gonna say.
I'm forgetting her first name. Roby, the woman,
Margot
Roby, who played Harley Quinn. I think as a performance, I think she's a good actress.
Yeah.
I think she gave it her all.
I
think that it's just, you know, the movie around her didn't support it. And here's the really sad thing while watching it.
Mm-hmm.
The realization of there was the skeletal structure of a good movie.
Yep.
There were beats they had where it's like, those in a better movie could have been amazing beats.
Yep.
To appreciate the good movie that he could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part that really torques me is, since this is part of the new DC Extended Cinematic Universe, they have codified that this is their Joker.
Yeah, well...
And he is easily the worst part of the movie.
Yeah, I would...
And that is such a letdown after the genius that was Heath Ledger's Joker.
Well, not only the genius that is Heath Ledger's Joker, because who was it? Somebody just recently was talking about, oh, you know, after Heath Ledger and, you know, Jared Leto, what's going to happen with the, you know, I'd like to see somebody play the Joker and actually turn out happy and well-adjusted afterwards. And all the geeks are like, Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill. And frankly, Cesar Romero. If you want to.
Yeah.
Although Romero was not the dark version of the character.
Oh, no.
You know, Hamill is Hamill, though. Hamill is special.
Indeed.
I think Ledger, I think people are giving too much credit to what happened with the Joker. I think Ledger was just much more of a... other things happen, and he just happened to play the Joker.
Yeah.
And I just think there's something wrong with Jared Leto.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I just go back and watch Fight Club just so I can see this not get beat out of them.
The problem was, I think Jill, when we were discussing the movie, put it best. My sister Jillian.
Yes.
They portrayed... The Joker wasn't anything... He wasn't the scary psychopath. He was an edgelord.
Yeah.
And, you know, this edgelord... And it's like, you know, that's great for if this was a single shot thing and they could go back and do a different Joker somewhere else. But if this is the Joker they're going to portray from here on out, Houston, we have a problem.
Well, you know, if all fails, they could just go back and do like they did with Star Wars and edit him out and, you know, CGI somebody else.
Well, I've heard some theories that if they played with them right, could explain this Joker, except that this is the Joker who's linked with Harley Quinn.
Yeah, well.
So, and now they just announced they want to do a Joker standalone movie.
He can go stand in the corner and think about all the bad things he's done.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, needless to say, what it comes down to, now that I've seen Suicide Squad, it's... The thing that I come away with is I'm just kind of sad because I think had they not had the executive... I have a suspicion that had this not been a Warner Brothers by committee movie, there could... Because, again, like I said, there is the skeletal structure of a good movie.
Yes.
It's just, that's not the movie they made.
The one thing that I want to toss in, since we're talking about this for a moment, mm-hmm. and since we have recently been talking about the wonderfulness that is Gal Gadot and the modern Wonder Woman.
Right.
And I was having a discussion with someone who will remain nameless to preserve everyone's sanity, about the difference between those two movies, about the difference between Wonder Woman and Suicide Squad. Because Wonder Woman, let's just call a spade a shovel here for just a quick second. You have a woman in high boots and a short skirt. And let's count the amount of time that you spend having that camera go boots, legs, skirt, bust. None.
Never.
Zero. Zilch.
The first reveal of the full costume is, in fact, the exact opposite.
Exactly.
Starts from her head.
Yeah. Now, you compare that to Suicide Squad, where Margot Robbie's ass deserves a line item credit in the credits because it spends more time on screen than half of the bad guys do. And so it's like, that is the male gaze right there. You hear people talking about the male gaze. That is it. Margot Robbie's ass versus Gal Gadot's entire awesomeness of being that isn't focused on her ass or her bust or anything else beyond. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And off soapbox.
Okay. So while we're on the subject of movies.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one that hasn't been made yet.
Oh my.
But has still already had cultural impact.
Oh, okay.
And I speak of the Hellboy reboot.
Oh, yes.
So a couple of interesting things have spun out of the Hellboy reboot. So the first thing, and I'm sure anyone who pays attention to geek culture has already heard this story, but one of the characters that they are putting into the new version from the comics is a character named Ben, I believe it's Daimyo. Who is Asian American.
Yeah, well... Side note, Daimyo is Japanese warlord from feudal Japan.
But the character himself is an Asian American character. His Asian culture is a part of the character and is sometimes a plot point in the comics. And when they cast him in the Hellboy movie, they cast Ed Skarin.
Isn't he the guy that was just on Game of Thrones?
He was on Game of Thrones season 2 and then got recast.
Oh, so not the guy who just showed up recently that everyone's been losing their mind over.
No, you're thinking of Ed Sheeran.
Oh, okay. My bad.
But no, Ed Skarin was on Game of Thrones. He was the mercenary who betrayed his fellows and joined Daenerys, and then in season 3 was played by an actor with much darker hair.
Oh, him.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm terribly sorry for the tangent. I just got confused.
And more significantly to a lot of fans, he played Ajax/Francis in Deadpool.
Oh,
which is probably what more people know him from
right
now, because it was a much more significant part for him. He got cast as Ben. And immediately everyone went, well, here's another character they're whitewashing.
Yeah.
So somebody gave Ed the source material. Now, it's either the outcry or the source material, but either way, Ed turned around and said, and very publicly said, I cannot stay in this part. And he literally said, I cannot contribute to Hollywood's whitewashing. Therefore, I'm resigning from the movie and am hoping that the producers will take more care in finding my replacement.
That is a lovely and wonderful thing. Shout out to Mr. Skarin?
Skarin. The interesting thing is a lot of people said, so does he deserve a cookie? It's like, he doesn't deserve a cookie. He did the right thing, which a lot of people say he did the minimum right thing. But what he did is... Hollywood, it's always been, well, actors can't say no. It's just, it's too hard. It could ruin their career. And everyone's like, well, you can't say that anymore. Ed Skarin is not an A-list actor. Yep. And he turned down a lucrative part because it was the right thing to do.
Yep.
And one person said, see, Ed Skarin has shown you how to do it, Hollywood.
Yeah, how about that?
And the producers have come out and said, we respect Ed's decision and take his points to heart and are going to endeavor to find a more... appropriate actor to play Ben.
Good.
So it is, so it had an effect, and somebody said what this really is Ed used his white privilege correctly.
Yes.
He used his white privilege to actually further the right cause.
Yeah.
And in the same time put those actors who did not have that courage and could maybe get away with it better than he did in a not so good light. Or as one person put it, so he will not be on the next T-shirt.
Yeah, no.
Along with Scarlett and Matt and Tilda and Emma.
Exactly. Yeah, now that, Sam, that's the thing is, I mean, no, he does not get a cookie, but at the same time, he deserves at least, you know, a social justice fist bump or something from the perspective of, no, you did the right thing.
And attaboy. A lot of people said, well, I'm going to pay attention to what else he's done because clearly this is an actor who's going to need support. So the two questions are, A, are the producers going to do the... They're kind of pigeonholed. They have to find an Asian American actor to play the character now. But the other question people are asking is, what is this going to do to Skarin's future casting? Our casting director, is he going to get blackballed? Are the people going to go, oh, no, he had courage. We could promote. We hired him. It's a question. But you told me at dinner there was another fallout from this.
So most folks know her as Quake, I think. Daisy.
Or Sky. Depending on which iteration from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is played by a talented actress by the name of Chloe Bennett. who is Hapa Chinese, well, Asian American, Asian Anglo. She is, and her birth name was Chloe Wong. Mm. And there were, she gave a shout out to Ed, saying, bravo, nicely done for standing up for folks. And people actually started giving her crap because they saw her as changing her name from Chloe Wong to Chloe Bennett. And she politely, actually not so politely, told them to step off by pointing out that she was trying to get work as Chloe Wong. She couldn't get work as Chloe Wong. She changed her name to Chloe Bennett. That's the only change between where she was and where she is now. And suddenly she's getting parts. So, you know, it both steps point out some of the racism that is inherent in the system.
Yeah.
And I give shout out to Ed and I give a shout out to
Chloe.
While we're on this, if I could just sidetrack for just a brief moment.
Sure.
Because I took one for the team. I watched the pilot episode of Iron Fist.
Okay, and?
I waited for all the hype to die down. I wanted to give it a fair shot. I'd also heard that one of my favorite actresses, Jessica Henwick, is in it. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And it was an act of love to get through one episode. That, I mean, Jessica Henwick is a wonderful actress. I would watch her read the phone book with the sound turned off. And that was not enough to save that show. It was, I just want to smack the boy repeatedly.
So,
but anyway, end of soapbox.
And I think that segues us into TV.
Oh, okay.
So, and significantly because one of the things that has come out since our last episode was The Defenders.
Yes.
On Netflix, which is the Netflix Avengers.
Netflix Avengers with a nice touch of Three Musketeers, by the way. I saw a wonderful thing where they did the crossover.
Yeah, that was, I remember reposting that today on Facebook. So, Defenders is, and we've talked about it in the past, it's the four characters from the Netflix Marvel series coming together in a single show. And the thing is, it wasn't bad. It was enjoyable. But it wasn't as good as the other individual series, the first three. And I realized why. Because since it was A, shorter, but also trying to give equal time to all the characters, you didn't get the depth from some of the series. And I think there were some missed opportunities that would have been handled better in the individual series. So it was, there were certainly things to appreciate. One thing I came from a deep realization watching after first few episodes, especially once all the characters came together, is you have all of these characters together and your eyes just immediately gravitate to Mike Colton as Luke Cage.
It's like, oh, yes.
Okay, you, sir, definitely grab attention just through natural charisma.
Yep.
And this tells me good things about your future, especially since you have Luke Cage and that wonderful series that you headlined in your resume. So, but that I think that Luke got misserved in The Defenders by, to make the series work, they have to culminate his prison storyline.
Okay.
And he's coming back home. So they're dealing with the part of the coming back home story for Luke. And I'm like, I just have to believe the Luke coming home and trying to reintegrate into the community would have been a much better story in season two of Luke Cage.
Yes.
Instead, we get kind of a truncated version for the Defenders.
But are they really going to continue to have individuals of the four series?
Yeah, they're already filming Jessica Jones season two. I think they've at least cast Luke Cage season two, and they're doing Daredevil 3, and they are going to do Iron Fist 2.
Can we just like accidentally bump off Danny Rand and get a Claire the Night Nurse series going instead?
You know, it's not Claire the Night Nurse that I want.
Oh, yeah?
Although I think she would work well in the series I do want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So in the comic books, Misty Knight, who was one of the main female characters in Luke Cage.
Misty Knight's a comic book star?
She's a character from the comics.
Okay. Sounds like a porn star. Sorry.
Well, Misty Knight, who was the female police officer in the Luke Cage series.
Okay.
And Colleen Wing, who was the female lead on Iron Fist.
Yes.
In the comic books, are known collectively as a team known as the Daughters of the Dragon.
Okay, then.
And they do team up in the Defenders series, where you see the possible origins of the Daughters of the Dragon with Claire as the third member.
Excellent.
So, I will say this. Those characters get served fairly well in the Defender series.
Okay.
They are as much the heroes of the story as the ones with superpowers.
So I think I will just skip over the remainder of Iron Fist and jump straight in.
There's somewhere on the website a thing entitled Everything You Need to Know About Iron Fist Without Actually Watching It.
Even better. I love it.
And interestingly, they do take advantage. You have the scene that it was almost begged for of Luke Cage challenging Danny's white privilege.
I love it already.
That exists in the series, which is...
Well, isn't there a bit of Luke Cage spanking him, too? Knocking
yeah,
him?
That I won't spoil there. Let's just say there is more than one fight.
Good.
Everyone gets to hit Danny. I'll just say that. Everyone gets to hit Danny.
He's the pinata. I love it. Okay.
He's actually... Here's the sad thing. Okay, this is the one spoilery bit I'll give. You can watch the Defenders and look at Danny Rand less as a character and more as a MacGuffin.
Okay.
He is a plot device that moves the plot forward.
Yep.
That is his purpose. And yeah, and I think the other problem is I haven't seen enough of Finn Jones' other work to gauge, but he's clearly the weakest of the actors in the main series. And it's really painful to watch Finn Jones having one-on-one scenes with Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, see, that's the other reason why I want to watch the show, is because Sigourney Weaver is awesome.
Because Sigourney Weaver is Sigourney Weaver.
Exactly.
And she is in the movie at her Sigourney Weaverist.
Even better.
It's enjoyable. There are flaws.
Of course.
And I think part of it just comes back down to, it's a culmination of all four series and brings to it the strengths and weaknesses of its progenitor series, and doesn't allow for the depth that some of those series really dove into. You touch on some of Jessica's issues, but you don't get to dive into them. You touch on some of Luke's issues, you don't get to dive into them. A little bit more with Daredevil, but I think that's in part because one of the characters, and this is advertised in the show, is Elektra.
Yeah.
His girlfriend, so.
Well, not only that, but it's just sheer mathematics. You've had two seasons of Daredevil out already. You've only had one season of Luke Cage, one of Iron Fist, and one of Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got a little more gravitas there because you know Matt Murdock a little better than everybody else. So.
And his, I mean, that story, and also, frankly, his supporting cast come off pretty well as well.
Good.
They do pick all the major supporting players from the individual series are present.
Good.
So, like I said, it's a good show. It's just pales a little in comparison to most of them.
Yeah. Well, one last thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, can't do it right now, but sometime in the near future, perhaps we could have a discussion on how to watch and consume and deal with problematic media. Because that is a recurring theme that we've been dealing with
a lot. If we're going to do that, I think it's a good idea. I think we need more people.
Yes.
I think we next time we do a roundtable episode.
Yep.
Because if we're going to discuss how you consume problematic media, I want Jill and Jennifer.
Yes,
in
please.
The room.
Yes,
absolutely.
Please.
But I think that's a good idea, and I think we should put that one on the books. Let's take an action item.
Well.
Did
you get the memo?
Yeah.
Okay.
So since now let's talk about another series that came out bingeable that I alluded to earlier.
I can talk about 5/7 of that.
So have you watched?
I have seen all but the last two episodes.
Okay, well, I won't go into spoiler territory, but The Tick.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Nope. You were going somewhere else entirely. Well,
yes.
We'll get there. That's all you. The Tick came out on streaming. So from what I understand, because it was only 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And my understanding is there are more episodes to come. We're showing half the season now and half the season later. And it was clearly the plan because they literally have a character say cliffhanger in the final episode.
I love how completely unrepentant they are.
And so here's what I'll say, where I have to put caveats on the Defenders, I put no caveats on Tick. It's wonderful.
Good.
It is, as somebody who started following the character back in the comic books, it really, and the fact that Ben Edlin? Yeah, I think Ben, the original creator of the comic,
yeah,
is the head writer.
Oh, nice.
And creator of the series. So it is the original creator still playing with his most famous creation.
Good.
So the spirit of the character is still intact. But the best description I heard, here, let me give you, because everyone goes, this is a dark and gritty reboot of The Tick. Here is the best analogy.
Okay.
The Tick is Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy starring the Adam West Batman.
Oh my.
Because you have this dark and grimmer world,
uh-huh,
and this absolutely buoyant, positive, four-color superhero in the middle. And it's a world with superheroes. But it's everything's dark and gritty, except for the Tick, who is his most positive. He's got nothing bad. Even the villains he's beating up, he's saying, you should do better. You know, it's time for you and I to have the talk. It's, you know, this may be, in fact, the most positive version of the Tick ever.
Awesome.
And it works because he stands in such stark contrast to the world around him, and which is really an interesting choice. And, yeah, there's a lot more depth. I mean, it is ultimately a cartoony world.
Of course.
But it's the darker cartoony with the Tick as a glaring counterpoint to that. And it just, but it's crafted just right that it makes sense. Including, there's a point where one of the questions early in the series is the Tick actually there?
I was going to say, I had heard from the beginning that there was elements of, is the Tick Arthur's Tyler Durden?
Yeah. And they play with that.
Okay.
And they play with it well.
Good.
So, but those kind of things, but A, the cast is great. The cast is just great. I'm trying to remember, I should have looked this up before the episode, the actor playing the Tick.
Okay.
He is a well-known in Britain actor. And he appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, as the lieutenant in the Nova Corps.
Okay.
Who calls them a-holes. And that here he's just, I mean, he is, you know, he's got a character that calls for chewing the scenery.
Well, you know, Townsend Coleman?
No. It's Peter something. Oh, no, you're looking at the original. Hang on. We are right now having the adventure of Daniel's pocket internet as I try and get the name of.
Get your hand out of my pockets.
Pronounce that. It's a, yeah.
Peter Serafinowicz.
So he's the Tick, and then you have the Arthur character, who is Griffin Newman,
mm-hmm,
who hasn't done a lot, but he, as Arthur, he plays the most neurotic Arthur ever.
Well, he also looks like he should be the big brother to the kid who's on a Series of Unfortunate Events.
Yes. Well, and they play with that. They actually play with an Arthur who takes brain meds.
Interesting.
So there's a lot, and it just, the rest of it, Jackie Earle Haley is in there, chewing the scenery just as much as the Tick. Alan Tudyk appears as a voice character.
Of course he does.
Because it's Alan Tudyk, and that's just another mark of honor the series has going for it. I will say that if you're a fan of that kind of thing, The Tick is a great way to spend 3 hours.
And that is available through...
It's Amazon Prime. It's Amazon Video. So it's that streaming service. But, you know, Amazon... Interesting thing, again, Amazon and Netflix are both right now. They're like the ABC and NBC,
yeah,
of streaming services.
Well, and that's what it's becoming, too. I mean, between that and being able to patch in, like, HBO Go or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's... That may be where we're headed. Who knows?
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's well worth the watch. Now, a show that I've fallen behind, but you still cover, had its season finale that you haven't quite caught up on yet.
Yeah, I know.
So, Game of Thrones.
Peter Dinklage.
Sorry, yes?
So, I may actually start catching back up. I've fallen behind, but I may only start with this season. I'm spoiled for the other seasons. I'm actually fairly spoiled for this season. But enough intriguing. The story seems to have gotten interesting again.
Well, yes. My one loving critique that I will offer.
Okay.
Is that the good news is, other people are writing from George R. R. Martin's source material.
Right.
They only have 7 episodes, so they have a desire to trim things down.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is that the... Well, for example, in season 1, how many episodes does it take for them to get from Winterfell down to King's Landing? 2 or 3.
Yeah.
That they now either have a teleportation device, or it's the hand wavium of we're going on the dragon, or something, because things are happening at a much faster pace, not only as far as the plot,
mm-hmm.
but as far as people getting from point A to point B. And that's a little jarring. So yeah. Either time is nominally, supposedly, time is passing faster, but it's also, wow. You know, it's lovely, it's great, it's wonderful. I'm enjoying seeing what they're doing to try and tie up. I mean, I do not envy the show writers one iota.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are doing what, Anderson did to Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
They got all these notes, and they're trying to shoehorn it all into, This was 70 hours, and they get another 70 hours next time, and that's it. The downside is, by the time this episode comes out, early September 2017. Season 8,
mm-hmm.
May 2019.
So I've heard, I hear part of that is it's just weather. They needed to actually be winter when they film.
Yes, and that's a long time. I don't know about you, but the last, 8 months since mm-hmm. January feel like an ice age mm-hmm. for more reasons than one.
I've been there waiting for Doctor Who, so I understand.
Yeah, so the idea of sitting around and kind of twiddling one's thumbs
mm-hmm.
for the next, I'm going to do bad math, 19 months? 20 some odd months?
Something December, like that.
And then 5, and 19 months? No, pardon me, 21 months. 21. My bad.
All right.
Yeah. That's enough time to sit down and not only work through the entire series, but hey, I can start that Game of Thrones cross-stitch that I've been working on.
So, another thing, since we're talking about Game of Thrones.
Yes.
I just want to briefly touch on it. There's been a controversy. The producers have already announced what their next series is going to be.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this Confederacy?
Oh, don't even get me started on that thing.
Yeah, that's hopefully that's just going to die on the vine.
The thing of it is, though, is I'm trying to remember who it was that announced the other alternative history.
It's one of the streaming services.
One of the streaming services announced. And see, I like this concept so much more. Because the Confederacy is basically, gee, what had happened if the South had won the Civil War?
Well, I don't think it's one. I think what if there had been called a draw?
Yeah.
What if they just stopped the war and the Confederacy was allowed to survive?
What if succession happened?
Yeah.
And wasn't contested?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that sort of thing. That, I'm sorry, these days it's almost like we're living in it anyway. Have you seen the news recently?
Fair enough.
All right.
So the other show, I don't know what it's called.
I'm not certain of what it's called, but just the simple premise of the South lost the Civil War, slavery was ended, and as reparations, the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama
mm-hmm.
are essentially given wholesale to African Americans to make their own country.
Yeah.
And obviously, they are a small country surrounded by a larger company. country, so surrounded by a larger country. And so they're linked in many ways. Mm-hmm. But the ideas, I mean, this goes back to, reminds me of this really odd movie that came out in the 90s. Harry Belafonte Jr. and John Travolta, called White Man's Burden. And it was this alternate history where African Americans colonized America and white people were the minority. And it wasn't like the Barnes books where it was still back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. This is modern day.
Huh.
And so you have, you know, black cops on patrol in the nasty parts of Los Angeles putting the white guys up against the wall. And it's eye-opening because it points out how, where our underlying gut level assumptions are.
Yeah.
So.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that was enough of a tangent. Sorry. Right.
So, the only other thing, I mean, we're on the cusp of the new TV season's beginning. We'll see where we go this year. I haven't seen a lot that's got me excited on brand new series yet. So I'm really just waiting on series I already watch to see where they come back. Because anything new that I'm excited about is coming from Netflix and Amazon, where they show up whenever.
Yep, when they want to. When they're done.
Yeah.
I have to say, as thinking of regular sorts of television, while I have not seen a single episode of Supergirl,
mm-hmm.
I have to say I have a newfound deep respect for the stunt woman, who is Supergirl's stunt woman,
mm-hmm.
and wow!
You're talking about the Ninja Warrior thing?
Yep, I've seen a couple of clips of that, and it's like, good golly, Miss Molly, that person has got some muscles and some skills that 99.9% of us could only dream of ever having.
And more power to her, and yeah. She gets to be celebrated for it.
Yes.
That's the great news. So, okay. Let us turn our weathered eye to the comic book industry.
Oh, Lord.
So, there's a couple things going on. DC, I think, is just doing a decent job. They're putting out interesting books. They right now are in the midst of a storyline that is, again, their cleanup from the New 52, and they are incorporating elements of Watchmen.
Interesting.
So they're bringing the Watchmen character slowly into the DC universe.
Well, which is odd given the number of obvious pastiches between Watchmen and the DC universe.
Which is apparently going to be a storyline.
All right.
They're not ignoring it. They're going to go right into it.
So Owlman and Batman are going to have a you stole my shtick?
But except it's Night Owl is not a pastiche of Batman. He's a pastiche of Blue Beetle.
Okay. I love you. I've known you for 16 years. You're a nerd.
And our podcast is called Fanboy News Network.
Yes. And show of hands, how many people knew that he was a pastiche of Blue Beetle, not a knockoff of Batman?
Yeah. But so the thing there is, of course, this is, I'm sure, somewhere Alan Moore is howling at the moon.
Alan Moore's been howling at the moon since.
Right. So of more interest, we turn our weary eyes to Marvel.
Ah.
Where just this week we got the final issue, finally, of Secret Empire, which is the culminating storyline of the Nazi Cap story.
So it's dead. We can it out behind the barn and put it out of our collective misery.
Certainly over. I don't know what they're going to do in the way of ramifications. The problem was, and you used the term earlier, their solution was, let's magic it away.
Yes.
Let's hand-wavium it.
Yes, the rarest of all elements, hand-wavium. These are not the droids you're looking for.
In this case, the Cosmic Cube and its reality-bending powers will provide much of our solution.
Isn't the Cosmic Cube what Loki had in the first Avengers movie?
It is, however, They play it differently in the movies than they do in the comic. In the movies, it's actually the Space Stone, and they call it the Tesseract, and it has very specific powers, none of which are to alter reality at a base level.
That's never stopped them before.
Yeah. But that is the power in the comics, and that is, A, apparently what led to Nazi Cap in the first place, and what provided the solution where the power of the Cosmic Cube was used to manifest the real Steve Rogers and have him and Nazi Cap get into a knockdown dragout where Steve got, where real Cap got his hands on Mjolnir and it was all over but the pounding.
Well, there's nothing. So tell me, did like Nazi Cap have a goatee so you could tell him apart? Or
no, but he was wearing green and gold armor. Hydra colors.
Of course.
So that it was very, whereas Cap was in the original Captain America costume, which he has not worn in the comics for years.
So I just have to say, I'm going back and doing a reread of Sandman.
Sure.
Which is a lovely and wonderful series, one of the all-time greats. And there's that one episode in Dream Country with the Dream of a Thousand Cats.
Yeah.
Where basically all the, I mean, it's been in print for 30 plus years. I think we can talk about it safely.
Yeah.
Where the cats of the world are dreaming of a world where cats are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And it all happened, and the whole, everything went topsy-turvy because enough humans got together and dreamed of a world where humans were in charge. When it's Neil Gaiman,
mm-hmm.
and when it's Neil Gaiman, and when you're talking about people who dream,
mm-hmm.
and the power of dreams, that makes sense. That is something where I will gladly leave my willing suspension of belief at the door and embrace the idea of the Dream of a Thousand Cats. When it's Captain America? No.
Yeah.
No. That you can't just say, oh, I really, 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 I super duper believe in you, Steve Austin, or Steve Rogers. No.
Oh, you know, that may have actually been a better story than what they wrote. I'm not going to get into details, other than to say, it's not just that it was bad writing. And it was bad writing.
Yeah.
It was lazy.
Yeah.
And the problem was, ultimately, the story didn't say anything.
Jack Kirby is and Stanley are going to walk them through the streets of New York City going, shame, da-ding, shame.
Really, they should, because, you know, there was opportunity to at least make political commentary. And
you'd think?
And it happened by the fans, not by the writer.
Yeah.
So it's, all they did was damage the reputation of Marvel and Captain America to no good outcome.
DC would argue with that.
And I think we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Although you mentioned something, realized I did. Let's roll back to TV for just one short moment.
Sure.
Good Omens.
Oh, yes.
So the wonderful book by Sir Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
Where it was in Sir Terry's will that Neil produce a TV series.
Really? I did not realize
that. That's why this is happening. It was the last request from Terry Pratchett to Neil Gaiman, produce the series. And what's Neil going to do?
Oh, I mean, I'm like a little verklempt here. That is a lovely and wonderful. I had no idea that that was the story behind it.
Yeah. Neil was like, eh, whatever. But then it's like, well, Terry asked.
Yeah, and how do you say no to that?
Yeah. So,
oh, God, how do you say no to Terry Pratchett from beyond the grave saying, yo, you should do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the opening salvo of casting occurred,
mm-hmm.
and was superb. So you have the two main characters, the demon and the angel, Azathoth and Crowley.
Gesundheit.
And our angelic member of the crew will be Michael Sheen, mm-hmm. of the Queen and
yep.
Twilight, but also many good things. excellent British actor. And our demon will be David Tennant.
Which is lovely.
They are the perfect foils for each other and mirror images, which just work for those characters. If the rest of the casting is on the level of that, we are in excellent shape.
I mean, it's one of those things where... How many times have we talked about things such as Harry Potter? Mm-hmm. Where you have the whole of British cinema, mm-hmm. you know, having cameos all through eight episodes. And how everyone just kind of stepped up to play that game. Those two, I mean, now granted, David Tennant, I love the man. Mm-hmm. I think he not only is a great Doctor Who, but I mean, his stuff in Harry Potter. Him playing a bad guy is kind of getting typecasting at this point.
Though. Except I don't consider that character a bad guy from the context of the story.
He has been a demon for 6,000 years. Yes, he kind of went native. And...
Yes. Yeah, I would argue... Well, that is an argument for another day.
Indeed.
Although I will say, if you're really interested in seeing something interesting that Neil Gaiman... the first episode of the reboot of DuckTales is now available.
Neil Gaiman wrote the DuckTales?
No, David Tennant played Scrooge McDuck.
You just hurt my head.
It's wonderful.
Jeffrey Robert Harris, you hurt my head. Oh my God.
The new DuckTales, I watched the first episode, and it was fantastic. Particularly because the cast they got a lot of SNL alums.
They're not working this season.
And Kate Miguchi from Garfunkel and Oates is Wilbigail Vanderquack. The Donald Duck is a main character in the series, and it is the current official voice of Donald in the series. And they have three different voice actors for Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and they've given them distinct personalities.
Hey, that's a nice change. All right.
And but it is... I watched the first episode, and by the end of it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch the rest of this now. It was very well done. But part of it was David Tennant just clearly... I'm getting to play Scrooge McDuck using my own accent. Stand back, everyone.
That is lovely. That is lovely and wonderful. Oh, my. Ah.
So,
I'm sorry. That is just... Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
We went there.
You win.
Let's... So, turning to books.
Yes.
What have you been reading?
Reader's Digest condensed version... I have been on an adventure for about 10 days, and this is one of the first days I've had to hold still. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but I am still reading The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore.
Right.
Which is amazing.
So, which you talked about at length last time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that is what I still am. I'm wading my way through. It is a history book, though. I mean... Mm-hmm. It does get rather thick, and I can only read it in small doses. But yes, so that is currently still on the shelf.
Okay.
And you?
So as I said last time, I tapped out on the Wild Cards novel.
Yes.
Because it was not good.
Yes.
And I decided that it was. You know, life is too short to read bad novels.
Yes.
And as I vowed last time, I picked up Sandman Slim by Richard Cadry.
Yay!
And I did, in fact, finish the first Sandman Slim novel and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes.
As a longtime fan of Jim Butcher's Dresden Files, it hit many of the same chords while being a very different story.
Well, I mean, at the same time, you are a fan of the original noir, too.
Yes.
You know, the old Dashiell Hammett and stuff like that. So I'm sure that you can see echoes and recurring themes without necessarily seeing one as a carbon copy.
Well, what I think is both mine the same well of inspiration.
Yes.
Which is, let's take noir and add supernatural.
Yep.
So, absolutely enjoyed it and intend to read the rest of the series. It is not the next book I'm going to be reading, but it was a very enjoyable novel. The next one I'm going to read is the second novel of a series. Now, I will admit, part of the reason I read this series is the author is a friend of mine.
Fair enough.
It's a man named Matt Youngmark. I think I may have mentioned before when I read the first book in the series, Matt, up till now, has been writing choose-your-own-adventure books, but for a more adult reading level.
Okay.
At first,
Adult as in grown up or adult as in adult?
Adult as in grown up.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. No, reading level, not subject matter.
Just checking.
So he wrote a book, he's got a series where a teenage girl from modern day finds herself transported into classic novel stories.
Oh,
and
yes.
And the first book in the series was The Wonderful Wizard of Fothermucking Oz. And the hook is that she finds herself transported into the novel, not the movie.
The bomb book, not yeah. the...
And so she has the expectations of having grown up with the movie, which aren't being met because that's not what's happening.
Surprise, Fothermucker!
And of course, she finds herself in the role of Dorothy.
Of course.
So the next book, and her name is, I think Alice Grimbo. So the second book in the series, which just came out, is A. Grimbo, Warlord of Mars.
As opposed to John Carter, or
right, right. Okay. It's Princess of Mars.
Okay,
the first John Carter novel, and that's the thing. Each one is going to be her finding herself in yet another novel, having not been a well-read person.
So okay, I like this, and you could just as easily send up that no, we're not talking about the movie. We're talking about the book.
We are talking about the book. Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I loved the first one. It was a good read.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting pulling the narrative from the original novel and yet making it accessible and readable for what he was telling. And I see him every year at NorwestCon. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about the first book had come out during this last NorwestCon, so Easter. Obviously, he's a fast writer.
Yeah.
And so he's got the next book out. For all I know, he'll have the third book out before the next time I see him. But he's a cool dude, and his stuff is definitely entertaining.
Well, if we're going to do that, because the as far as plugs are concerned,
mm-hmm.
There's a new book out called Gather the Daughters.
Okay.
By the author's name is Jenny Melamed, M-E-L-A-M-E-D.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Jenny for several years now.
Mm-hmm.
She sang at my wedding. So,
Fair enough. And
it's also a damn good book. I have not read it all. I have been to the author readings that she's had
mm-hmm.
here in Seattle. And yeah, a nice little dark dystopian with a strong feminist bent.
Okay.
So people will draw an automatic conclusion or automatic similarities between that and say, what's her bucket?
Handmaid's Tale?
Yes. Okay. I'm trying to remember Handmaid's Tale's author.
Atwood?
Yes, Margaret Atwood. Take away my feminist card. People will draw fast and easy comparisons between her and Margaret Atwood, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because Atwood is an amazing author. Even if she doesn't pull a single punch.
Sure.
But yes, Gather the Daughters is another good one out. Highly recommended.
All right. Well, with that, we are drawing to a close for this episode. Hopefully Daniel and I would like to say our lives would be calming down, but I know it's not. I've seen our itinerary.
Your lips to God's ears, man.
I have a trip in the next couple months out of the country
mm-hmm.
coming up. Quick side note before we depart.
Yes.
Just to let everyone know, my original plan for this week, I was thinking I was going to be very tired while we were recording because I was supposed to fly to Houston, Texas for business in the early part of the week.
Wow.
And that got canceled by Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah, some idiot named Harvey decided he was going to book up every room in the hotel.
And my heart goes out to the people of Houston. I do have business contacts there. I know people there. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with you. And for those of you, if anyone who knows me has tracked down the podcast and is listening, I'm thinking about you, and I'm glad to hear that everyone I worked with did report in as safe.
Yes.
Would that everyone could have said that. And we hope you all take care.
And in addition, we spend a lot of time talking about heroes
mm-hmm.
and superheroes and... It's not just, the easy answer is not all heroes wear capes.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, there are, I have two friends of mine. One is a buddy from the Navy and the other one is my nephew. And they are both down there in the, they don't live in the area, but they're both down there. One is with the Cajun Navy and one is, which is a, I mean, if you haven't heard about these people, they just good old boys decided to toss their boat in the back of the truck and they're going over there and they're pulling people out of their houses. That's, we talk about heroes. These are heroes. These are people showing up because something needs to be done.
These are the people that hear the voices of their better angels.
Indeed.
So with that, if you'd like to get a hold of Daniel or I, we can be reached through fanboynewsnetwork.com.
Indeed.
Just leave a comment in with the episode, and we will be back in the near future. And hopefully we will not have to tell any cons behaving battle stories.
Cross fingers.
We'll talk to you all later.
Take care, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.